It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome to Hockey News Podcast, presented by BetMGM and McKennie Hockey. I'm Mike Stevens. This is Ryan Kennedy. Ryan, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. So I'm not sure about you, but I'm a bit of an early riser. I like to get up, you know, watch the sun rise, contemplate my life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at 6:45 a.m. Eastern Standard Time this morning, the NHL dropped a pretty, like, landmark, huge announcement for the future of what at least the look of the league is going to be, in that they announced that Fanatics, the juggernaut apparel company that has essentially just dominated the market ever since they really broke through, is now going to be the official on-ice jersey supplier, jersey partner of the NHL, beginning in 2024-25, when the after the deal with the current deal, at least with Adidas, expires. It's a huge announcement. It's a 10-year partnership, so likely by the time global warming wipes us out and everything, the deal will still be going on.
Yeah.
So it's pretty. This is pretty big news. It happened pretty early, so thankfully we were able to cover it today.
Indeed.
This is fresh, hot off the press.
That's right.
What do we think about this?
I think it's very interesting. Every time we get one of these deals, you want to see what the new company is going to do, mostly from a design perspective. And I think with Adidas, for me, the lasting legacy would be the reverse retro jerseys, where we had some huge home runs. We had some that were misses, but you're going to expect that when you have 32 teams.
They were mainly, it was probably like, I would say, 85, 90%.
I was going to say, 80-20.
Really good.
Exactly. And they did two iterations.
Mm-hmm.
The big challenge for Fanatics, obviously, is going to sort of be to win over fans. And, what we're hearing, which is very interesting, is that the replica jerseys that fans will buy will be made in the same Quebec factory as the actual NHL jerseys that will be worn on ice by the teams. So that's a very interesting bit of information that I think would probably assuage the fears of some out there, just in terms of what the replicas are going to look like versus the real thing.
Look, this is the first time that Fanatics will be supplying on ice or on field, I guess, on during play jerseys or uniforms in professional sports. They obviously have been providing all of the apparel basically or the off-field apparel for the MLB, the NHL, and I believe the NFL as well. For the last, I believe ever since 2017, 2018 is when they came into the NHL. Look, social reaction hasn't been great to this, but I've been looking at it more ever since it came out, in the 4 or 5 hours since it's dropped. And I thought, so there's been a couple more little tidbits of information that's come out, and I'm very tepid, very hesitant. We had a Fanatics CEO, Joe Bozich, featured in Money and Power. He did a photo shoot. Very, brilliant guy. Obviously, Fanatics is a bit of an interesting reputation when it comes to the consumer side of things. But what is, I guess, not quelling completely, but what is really sort of at least giving me inspiring confidence is that these jerseys are going to be made in Canada.
Right.
Like you said. But they're also, the replicas are going to be made in the same factory. They're not, outsourcing it and slapdashing it all together.
Yeah.
Seems like it's going to be, at least the replicas are going to be in the same place as the actual jerseys that the players will be wearing, which you would lead to think it's going to be similar quality. That'd be great. Another, too, is that they're going to be using the same factory in Quebec that, the current Adidas jerseys are being made in.
Yes, that's true.
So it's not even they're taking all this, they're moving it. All across the world, they're going to be used, at least they're going to be using cheap materials. They're going to be using the same factory that the current jerseys are at. So it seems like, it seems like the NHL expected some trepidation with this, with this announcement. But it looks like, at least from the surface, they're doing everything they can to inspire confidence and to prove the average fan, or at least prove the hard, not the average fans, but the hardcore fans who are really, really passionate about, you know, their apparel and even the jerseys that players wear, prove them wrong and inspire confidence. And I think that's good. The NHL also said that they've, you know, sort of brought together a ton of inspired minds, like design minds and sports business minds and all that together, which seems to be good. So, you know, they're doing their best, and who knows? This could be great. This could be good for hockey-related revenue as well. And in my opinion, anything that gets the salary cap up is A-OK with me. So this is a huge announcement. It'll be really, really interesting to see you know, how this unfolds. They did say as well, or at least I believe it's ESPN's Greg Wyshynski said that any actual design changes to jerseys likely won't take effect until around 2026-27. Mm-hmm. So at least, like, they're not going to come in and redesign, you know, the Montreal Canadiens logo to be like a dragon or something, right. You know, like, it's, even though that'd be very cool. Right. So I think that I don't think the change will be as dramatic as people think it is. And it seems like they're very committed to, you know, to putting a good product out there and, you know, re-inspiring confidence. And that's all you can really ask for from an announcement like this, I think.
There you go.
Yeah. So, you know, personally, I am cautiously excited. I would like to see what they do. Apparel is very cool, very important to growing the game. And if you really nail it, you know, that it matters, especially to the average fan. All right, Ryan, let's move on. The wild card.
Yes.
The wild card. This is essentially, now that the trade deadline's over, now that, you know, everything is, you know, there's no transactions, there's no rumors in that regard. It's the playoff hunt. It's the playoff watch. And their teams are actually, you know, like, just with the way the division is structured now, or at least the divisional alignment is structured now, the teams at the top are pretty much set. And we still have, like, you know, 10, 11, 12 games remaining. So their teams are resting guys. Mm-hmm. I kind of got, I won't say screwed in fantasy, but Boston did rest Dmitry Orlov over the weekend on the final day of my playoff matchup, and mm-hmm. I did lose by the 3 points he was projected to get, so that was mm-hmm. fun. But on the other flip side, there are teams that are, there's just a dogfight for the last couple wildcard spots here in both conferences. How are we feeling about this overall race, and who should we be worried about here?
Yeah, so I'll start in the East, where it feels like we're down to three teams for two spots. I feel like Ottawa, they made their final push.
They made a valiant effort.
Yeah, yeah. That game against the Leafs on Saturday, it was kind of, I think, a metaphor for the season mm-hmm. where, you know, great effort. They managed to tie it up super yeah. late. You know, Brady Tkachuk, one of my favorites.
Yes, incredible.
Certainly came through in the clutch.
And then it came down to the wire. I believe it was, what, a 9-round shootout?
Yeah. Like, and they got beat by Alex Kerfoot, who hadn't scored a real goal in more than 20 games. It's just sort of like, you did your best, but they probably have a little too much ground to make up right
yes.
now. And another one of their problems is the Florida Panthers have turned things around.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll talk about the Cats a little more later.
Oh, the Cats? They're
Cats.
Huh?
Okay. The Cardiac Cats.
Oh!
Yeah. I didn't make that up.
Okay.
The team I'm kind of worried about is Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Because they've lost 4 in a row, if I'm not mistaken. And the last 3 games, they have scored a total of 3 goals.
Yes.
That's a problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm looking at the Islanders, who are, you know, they're in that one slot right now, and they're winning more than they're losing. I think they've won 6 of 10. So I feel like even though some teams have games in hand, I feel like the Islanders are in a pretty good spot. Right now, in terms of momentum, I would take Florida over Pittsburgh. And, you know, the Penguins, like I say, they're in a tough spot. And then over in the West, I mean, Nashville's not out of it.
No, which is wild.
Which is totally wild.
Which
because
is nuts.
They were sellers at the deadline. Yeah. When I look at the Predators, they have a couple of games coming up at the end of this week against Seattle. Like, back-to-back games against Seattle, that could be their season.
Yes.
Truly.
Just like how the Senators game against the Leafs basically was their season.
Yeah, so that's big. And then you look at Calgary and Winnipeg, two teams that are really kind of, like, struggling right now. I look at both their schedules, and they're not easy, they're not hard. Like, I think both teams play the Ducks. I think both teams might play the Sharks. You know, but then you got, like, games against Vegas and, like, you know, better teams. So that one is just a super toss-up because, You know, Calgary, it feels like every game they're down 1-0 within the first minute, and then either they rally or they don't, which is, sorry, a hilarious non-comment on my part. And then Winnipeg has been banned.
They either rally or they don't.
Exactly.
Wow. Is there a third option that they can have there? Or I don't think so.
Sometimes they just skate away and never come back. That's rare, though. Yeah. I don't know if I've actually seen that. And Winnipeg's been banged up and just seems to have sort of lost their mojo. So that's tight. I'm kind of worried about both those teams, but at this point it kind of feels like at least one of them's going to make it. Mm-hmm. Someone's got to step up.
100%. I think everyone can say that like Pittsburgh might be the most, I would say like hand-wringing situation. Mm-hmm. Like everyone's white-knuckling in Pittsburgh. I'm not sure if... If you take a gander over to Penguins Twitter every once in a while, you know, it shows up on my page because I have a bunch of people I'm very friendly with, and Jesse Marshall is one of the hosts of the Staffograph podcast, and he's really locked in there as well. But holy smokes, it is like a civil war in Pittsburgh right now. Like it is crazy. Jeff Carter is like the whipping boy there right now, it seems. Uh-huh. And you know, I haven't paid close enough attention to his game this season, but if you base it on what's going on over there? I mean, he is just the worst person in the world, it seems.
Yin's got controversy.
Any team that with Malkin, Crosby, Letang, Gensel, you know, like all of those guys not being able to make the playoffs is unacceptable, especially after the Penguins went back and were like, all right, we're going to re-sign all these veteran guys. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep the core together, keep the band together on long-term deals with the expectation that, yes, it might, you know, hurt in a couple of years, but at least for these couple of years,
your window is still open.
And this is the first year of the window, and they might not even make it. Yeah. It's tough. The team that no one, like, and you mentioned them, but I haven't seen any conversation nationally. I haven't seen any conversation either in Canada or, like, none at all, is the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah.
This is a team that was near the top or at the top of their division for most of the season. And basically ever since the new year, almost after the new year, they have been among the worst teams in the league. This is a team that is, at this point, like, I don't know, I don't think they're going to make it. Like, I took a look at the record. They have 17 losses in their last 27 games.
Wow.
They've been shut out 4 times on that stretch. Their most recent game was a shutout. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a team that is in absolute free fall. And basically, like, I hope that, you know, I have a really good friend who's a Jets fan. And believe me, he's been blowing up our group chat talking about how no one is talking about this. Why isn't it? So I'm doing this for you, Brad.
There you go.
But like, this
we
is
hear
a,
you.
You take a look at this team, you take a look at the recent results, you take a look at just everything, their defensive metrics, but also the fact that they cannot score. Mm-hmm. And this is a team that was battling out with the Stars for the top of their division. It looked like they were one of the best stories in the league. Rick Bonus comes in, you know, makes a huge move by stripping Blake Coleman, or not Blake Coleman.
Blake Wheeler.
Blake Wheeler of the captaincy.
Yeah.
Blake Coleman caught a stray there. I apologize.
That's right.
But stripping Blake Wheeler of the captaincy, he seems like he went in there and his voice was exactly what they needed, and they reestablished a locker room, and it's just completely falling apart. Like, this is an 18-wheeler type collapse, and it doesn't, like, I don't understand what factor or what, like, addition, or, you know, like, it's not even like they have, like, a superstar that's going to be coming back from injury.
The only thing I can think of is when they lost Cole Perfetti to injury, it seemed to, like, fall apart.
Yeah, but he's, like, like 20? Like, it's...
But the funny thing is, like, he's something that they don't have a lot of, which is really young guys.
And whose fault is that?
Like, it's
not like there's a rule that the Winnipeg Jets can only have one really young guy on the roster.
It's true, but I think it's one of those things that you don't think about until it happens, and then it's like he just had that different mindset. I mean, he's so smart out there. He can obviously produce. You know, he was having a great offensive season for them. And yeah, I think it's one of those, it's like a kid that you didn't think you'd miss until you didn't have him, and then all of a sudden just that whole puzzle piece just didn't seem to line up for whatever reason.
That's a damning indictment on the way this roster is being built then. That if your playoff hopes on a team that has Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, you know, all like Josh Morrissey, who came out of nowhere to be a Norris contender. You have one of the two, I would say, best goalies in the league.
Yep.
And Cole Perfetti is the straw that breaks the camel. Like the Leafs lost Nick Robertson. And they didn't immediately go into a tailspin, so it's...
Right. But he's never produced like Perfetti has.
Yeah, but they're both, like, small but, like, really shifty guys. Like, it's... Yeah. This is, like... I don't know who to blame here.
Like, it's true, and it might just be one of those things where just the mojo went away, and you got to figure out, you know, because it's funny, you know, like talk to Josh Morrissey and Connor Hailbuck at the All-Star game, and you know they talked about the culture this year. They wanted it to be fun. They wanted it to be like, you know, and they were saying like the culture wasn't broken last year, but you know they could improve on it. And Rick Bowness came in, and I think an important thing was just the structure, like getting the defense more involved in the offensive attack. And what we've seen from Josh Morrissey is a career season.
Yes.
And it obviously, you know, it was interesting talking to Rick Bowness sort of a week or two later. And he told me, you know, when he was with Dallas, they always game planned for Josh Morrissey. And this was a player that he loved before he even got to coach him. And now, you know, he likes him even more. So I don't think it's a matter of, you know, something breaking specifically, but it's just something's off.
Yeah, something, they do seem to have sincerely lost their mojo. It's things are not going great there. Another team that, again, you mentioned, this is in the West too. And the thing about the West is we need to be harder on them because the West is wide open. As compared to the East, the West is...
It's not locked in the same way.
Nothing is locked in the same way. And even the teams at the top, at least when it comes to regular season results, they don't have the high, like they don't have the high end results that teams in the East do.
Yeah.
Like the Bruins have a 113 goal differential right now. I saw someone, it was completely unrelated to the tweet that I saw it, and it was someone like, oh, look at the standings, like Calgary's out of a playoff spot. I'm like, I'm sorry, but like it just says +113 beside Boston.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But you look at the Calgary Flames, and this is an unmitigated disaster. I know we've mentioned this before, but everyone seems to hate going to the rink right now. Like it is, and again, I'm not talking to the Calgary Flames, but like you just look at their faces. Jonathan Huberdeau's agent came out and basically called for the coach to get fired. There are reports now that Nazem Kadri has been very vocal behind the scenes about how, you know, coaching, how the locker room has essentially been lost. If you look at their record, and it's funny, like if you look at their results and record, before that, it was like pretty steady. Mm. And someone put up this graph the other day of like what the, you know, all the all the records of the wildcard teams. So someone put this graph up where it's the Calgary Flames, they're kind of steady, you know, like underwhelming but fine.
Yeah.
Daryl Sutter insults Jacob Peltier's debut, and literally it goes down.
Yeah.
It's like the behemoth at Canada's Wonderland. Like it goes down like that. It is nuts. I cannot imagine this coach sticks around. And this is a guy who won the Jack Adams last year.
It's the Jack Adams curse.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
They go, look, it doesn't, like, everyone was spinning this as the summer of Brad. Yes, you lose to Chuck and Goudreau. Those are two foundational players that you drafted, developed, raised, went through ups and downs with. But you went out and you turned it into Jonathan Huberdeau, who that season set the assist record for left wingers in a single season. Mackenzie Weegar, who's a legitimate number one defenseman in the NHL, who was on a great deal this year and is now signed to another deal.
Yep.
Then you sign arguably the biggest free agent on the market in Nazem Kadri.
Yep.
You get a bunch of guys back, and then on top of that, these two players, you know, going into a place that just lost two foundational stars, these two stars in their own right, sign the maximum term deals before even playing a single game for your team. So that's huge in their belief in what you're building. That's huge for the fan base who had to deal with, you know, a month of no one wants to live or play in Calgary, and then these two stars who gave up basically the remainder of their primes to play for you. And this is how it goes. Like this is a disaster. I don't like the Flames are fighting for playoff lives last night, and they lost 8-2 to the Los Angeles Kings last night.
Yeah.
And if you look at their results, their goaltending has cratered. And I have a question for you.
Yes.
And sorry, I don't want to make this a long-winded thing, but I have a question for you because I'm genuinely curious, and you're more of a prospect guy.
Yeah.
Has Justin or Dustin Wolf, has he killed someone or something? Like,
why
won't
they bring him up?
Exactly. Like, what is going, if you look at his numbers, he is like consistent, like 926 to 948 in every league he's played in for the last like 5 years.
Yeah.
And your number one problem is goaltending.
Yes.
Jacob Markstrom is sinking your team. Every time you turn on a Flames game, the score will be tied 5-5. The other team will have 47 shots, and the other team will have like 26 shots, and the Flames will have 47, and it'll still be tied.
Yeah.
Why won't they bring up their homegrown, stud goaltender who is in the AHL, who is putting up absurd, who is arguably the best goalie in the AHL.
Yes.
Why won't they bring him up? I don't get it.
Okay, so this is a fantastic question.
Please yes. give me some clarity.
Yes, okay. I'm going to weave a whole bunch
okay,
of things
here.
Okay,
here we go, here we go. Weave a narrative tapestry for me, Ryan.
Okay, so first of all, you have Daryl Sutter, who
hates young people.
Possibly. Obviously, it's life and death for the playoffs
yes,
right
yes.
now. This is a guy who trusts older players, right? And yes, Jacob Markstrom has been a huge problem. And I do feel like every time I turn on a Flames game on a Saturday night, if I'm like 5 minutes late, it's already 1-0
yes.
for the other team. But I see a reticence there because if you're Daryl Sutter and you are more of a veteran coach, you're saying to yourself, am I going to put my season on the line, which at this point is every night, for a kid that has never played in the NHL? Now, right or wrong, mm-hmm. I'm just saying
no.
that's the logic.
No, it makes
there,
a lot of sense. And it's also not just the season. It's likely your job on the
it's
line.
It's totally
too.
Your
yeah,
job.
Yeah, yeah. So that makes sense.
And that's I'm going to say that. If the Flames miss the playoffs, there's no reason to keep Daryl Sutter. He obviously was fantastic last year for them. And,
but this isn't last year.
But it's not last
exactly,
year.
Exactly,
yeah. And I did feel like there was a period where, you know, the Flames, and again, like, Bradshaw Living, I don't know how many GMs have gone through as much, like, adversity as Bradshaw Living the past few years.
Or has hired him as many coaches.
And that's why
yeah.
he had to keep Daryl Sutter for a good amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's been long enough where, and you have enough new guys where you can say, okay, I can make a clean cut from this guy, and it's no longer that cycle of coaches going through. So I think that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of Dustin Wolf, yes, in junior, when he played for Everett, he was one of the best goaltenders in all of Major Junior. And then in the AHL, ever since he got there, he's been one of the best goaltenders in the AHL, if not the best. Now, he is small.
He's
listed at 6 foot.
Yep.
Yes.
And we know you're...
And yeah. as I say, short goalies will break your heart. Now, having said that, I would like to see Dustin Wolf get games down the stretch because NHL players don't have a book on him.
No,
and
they don't.
We've seen this time and again where in the short term, a goalie can just knock people out because they don't know his tendencies. What we do know about Dustin Wolf is he stops a lot of pucks.
Mm-hmm.
He is a fantastic goaltender and... You never know. I mean, the best case scenario is obviously UC Saros. Like, that's
yes.
what you're hoping for. And I think we'll get to this later in the
we
show
are
as
going
well,
to,
talking
yeah.
about Devin Levi. But in the short term, I don't mind it. And for me, the short goalie thing is more a playoff
yes.
thing. When you're playing only against great teams,
you,
the shooters,
you pick this guy apart.
They're going to go over
yeah.
your shoulder. But yeah. in the regular season, like, if you need a win, over like a bottom feeding team.
Over like Columbus on a Tuesday night. Like,
exactly.
Go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're playing a team that has trouble scoring, totally toss Dustin Wolf in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could get you like a 35 save shutout. You don't know.
Yeah.
But I understand the reticence because literally Daryl Sutter, this might be it. He's a coach that already has a shelf life.
Yes.
And, you know, we see that with, ironically, several Jack Adams winners. You know,
mm-hmm.
John Tortorella has been the same. It's like he
yeah.
can win you a Stanley Cup. He can turn your also ran team into a playoff team, or it can all fall apart. And you just have to figure out what that timeline is. Sometimes.
Both. Yeah, exactly.
You just have to figure out what that timeline mm-hmm. is. Daryl Sutter is the same. He could win you a Stanley Cup, or his players could barricade him out of the dressing room, as they allegedly did in Los Angeles, where they could put a dumpster
did they?
In front of
the I didn't see that.
That was a story years ago.
Oh,
I'm not
oh,
sure
oh,
if
oh,
it was
in
ever
Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles.
Because they played the Kings last time. Like, wait a second.
No.
Yeah. yeah.
so, allegedly. So it can go one of yeah. two ways there. So yeah, I would love to see Dustin Wolf. And to me, it was like, if Calgary's out, then you definitely should play Dustin
oh,
Wolf.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But at this point, I'm even thinking, he might save your season just
exactly.
because he could steal you a couple of games before teams catch on to what his tendencies are.
That is 100%. Like, not even just catching on tendencies, but like, I think this guy, A, has earned it. But, like, I want to, like...
Totally.
Look at his stats. Like, keep in mind, this is a 21-year-old.
Yeah.
Goalies, like, they don't... Especially in the AHL, goalies don't usually even get a shot to be the team's number one starter. Especially seventh-round picks. This guy was picked 214th overall in 2019.
And again, it was a hype thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, like, this... I covered the AHL for, you know, for a long time. That's how I started. And you look at young goalies. Like, they don't usually get a shot to be... at least to get like real consistent games in the AHL until like 22, 23 years old. Like, teams are very hesitant about that. And but you look at this guy's stats, it's in 2017-18, Everett Silvertips, 928 save percentage in 20 games. 61 games next year, 936. 46 games next year, 935. He has a 3 games, you know, ATO or PTO, whatever you know, players do, 895, whatever. Next year goes back to junior for 22 games in his overage, in his overage season, COVID year as well, 940. Goes to the AHL last year, as a 20-year-old, mind you, in the AHL facing grown men. 47 games, 924. In the playoffs too, you know, he starts 13 games. And then this year, you know, he's 21 years old. He's still a young buck. He can just start to buy a drink in the States these days. 930 save percentage in 48 games. This is it. Like, I don't care, you know, what your inclinations are here. I don't care, you know, like what your biases are for players. It doesn't matter. Like, your job is to win. Like, this is a win now team.
Yes.
Every good player on your roster is approaching an age where their trajectories will start to dip.
Yeah.
Some would argue they already have.
Right.
And so for you, like, your job is to squeeze every ounce of success out of every single game you have. And if you are actively choosing, or if you're actively, subverting or ignoring someone who might be the best goalie in your organization right now.
Yep.
It's not just that Markstrom and Vladar have been, you know, like, not good enough or whatever. They're like, Markstrom's an 8, I believe it's an 889, and Vladar is an 893. These are two goalies who are way below average. They are tanking your season.
Yeah.
It is irresponsible of you to not at least give this kid a shot.
Yeah.
Because A, he's producing the numbers. He's producing numbers far and away better than anyone his age group, other than like Yaroslav Askarov, who is like a transcendent goalie prospect.
Yeah.
Number two, like, so he's earned it with his performance, and also like, if you don't try something new,
what do you have to lose?
What is the point? Exactly. Like, what is the point of showing up to the rink every day if you're just gonna go like, all right, throw Jacob out there again?
Yeah.
Like, it's it makes no sense to me.
Yeah,
it's frustrating. Anyway.
Yeah.
Moving over to the Sunshine State, we were just here for the All-Star Game. Alexander Barkov set a pretty important milestone the other day in that he became the Florida Panthers all-time points leader.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, he did this. I know Florida, you know, Florida's actually as old as I am. It was established in 1996.
Oh, okay.
That's the year I was born.
There you go.
So in my lifetime, I'm 27 years old now.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily like a really extensive franchise, but like the fact that Barkov was able to do this, and he's also 27, and he did this at the age of 27, is pretty important. But what, like, does this make him the best player in Florida Panthers history? Because there's a lot of different, and I have a lot of different opinions that I'm sure we're going to joust over in a second
good.
Here. But does this make him the best player in Florida Panthers history already?
I think he still has work to do.
Yes.
I would also like to point out, both you and the Panthers have been to one Stanley Cup final.
That's true.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Neither of you won, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I think there needs to be more time because, as I mentioned, they have been to a final. John Van Beesbrouck was the goalie. He was pretty fantastic for them that whole run. Then you have Roberto Luongo, who is in the Hall of Fame, and not only was he important to the Panthers early in his career, but he came back.
Yes.
And I think that's a big thing. You know, obviously he was great in Vancouver, but he came back to the Panthers. And I think just in terms of, like, you know, retiring a number, that sort of, you know, ring of honor, that sort of thing, that means a lot. And then the other name you have to consider is Pavel Bure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's really interesting is I was looking at the all-time leaderboard for the Panthers, and not many of their top career scorers are point-per-game guys.
Basically none of them.
Other
than Bure.
Except for Pavel Bure.
Yes.
Now, the thing with Bure is he played fewer than 300 games with the Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have to say to yourself, okay, well, was he there long enough to be considered the best ever? In terms of like an overall talent, you know, Pavel Bure, one of the most talented guys that's ever played in the NHL, but obviously his career took him to a couple of different NHL cities. So I feel that Barkov is on track, and if he could get them back to a final one year or even win it, then it's like,
oh, then it's
game
over.
Game over, right? Like, you know, Barkov, I mean, he's in all likelihood going to play 1,000 games for the Panthers. And maybe at that point, maybe he doesn't have 1,000 points, but maybe he has 900, something. I mean, he's a Selke guy. You know, he's not like he's not a Rocket Richard guy. But he's not an Art Ross guy.
Keep in mind, too, is that he's played 652 games. He has 614 points. He's close to a point per game. So if he reaches those 1,000 games, he will very likely be at least close to 1,000 points.
At least close, yeah. But because he has that great two-way element, I don't think it's not a knock on him if he only has 900 points in 1,000 games. I think at that point, you say, and if there's any sort of playoff success, then you're like, yeah, that's the guy.
Yes. I think, I'm in agreement that I think he's on track too. Mm-hmm. He's definitely not, even though he's the highest scoring guy, he's definitely not now. But then I look at like the Panthers sort of, like the legends that you mentioned there, like, you know, Van Beesbrook is in the conversation there, obviously, but I also, you know, like you mentioned Pavel Bure, you mentioned Roberto Luongo, and then I also brought up Ole Jokinen because he spent the majority of his time there. But I look at Bure, that's the first name when I was thinking about this, that's the first name that came to my mind. It's like, okay, well, Pavel Bure, like, he's, you know, he's an absolute, you know, superstar. Like, he was, you know, one of the flashiest, you know, hardest shots. Like, injuries, another guy whose injuries kind of derailed his career, but, you know, still was able to put up crazy numbers. And then I look at it and I go, he spent 4 seasons in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's not enough.
He produced, he scored, you know, he had 58 and 59 goals there. But he spent, you know, like, only parts of 4 seasons in Florida.
Yeah.
2 half seasons, really. And then I look at Roberto Luongo. Mm-hmm. Yes, he came back. That's awesome. I think that's very good for, you know, his look in the fan eyes. And also, if you look back at his numbers in his second stint in Florida, he was really good.
Yeah.
Like, it's like he still had it. Like, I was looking at his numbers, and like, he goes back to Florida. Everyone thought he was washed in Vancouver, right? He goes back to Florida, 924, 921, 922, 915, 929, and then finally, he's 40 years old and he does an 899, so he still almost breaks through that.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. Like, he was one of the best goalies in the league as like a senior citizen in Florida. You know, like, just another example of senior citizens just thriving in Florida.
I was gonna say, that's the one state where he would not be considered a senior. He would still be considered a
young buck,
a whippersnapper.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I look at, you know, where Luongo achieved most of his success. I look at where, like, in terms of actual statistical stuff, but also like where he achieved the most playoff success, where he achieved the most all-star, the highest all-star game votes and selections, and also where he won his trophies. Like, he finished, you know, he never won the Vezina, you know, unfortunately, but he finished runner-up in his first year in Vancouver, 7th his next year, 4th his next year, 10th the next year, 3rd the next year, but he did win the Jennings with Corey Schneider in 2010, 2011. He was also a second-team All-Star there. He also helped lead them to the Cup final. So I wonder, like, can you say that this guy's, like, the best as a Panther if the majority of his actual, like, tangible NHL success, his legacy success, came in somewhere else? He also won an Olympic gold medal while he was a Vancouver Canuck. So I wonder there too. And then Ole Jokinen, you know, very, very good career here. You know, he 7 years with the Panthers, but it was 419 points in 567 games.
So and if I'm not mistaken, 0 playoff appearances.
0 playoff appearances, 100%. So it's crazy to think that it's somewhat slim pickings here. But I would, like, I think he's not quite there yet. I think we'll have to give the edge to Luongo just due to longevity.
Yes.
Longevity. There you go. But Barkov, he's like,
Connery hated that.
Yeah, one. Yeah. We have our producer behind the camera who just gave Ryan. Usually, I'm the guy getting the dirty looks, but Ryan, yeah.
That was a championship eye roll.
Exactly.
I respect that.
I do think that Barkov, even if he just continues his, like, doesn't improve or anything, just continues his normal pace, he will be a shoo-in for that.
Yeah.
All right. We were talking about the playoff race. Another one was the tank to the bottom. Like, that race to the, I believe it's what, Dishonor for Connor, as they call it.
Oh, that's a good one.
I think that's what people are saying.
Oh, nice.
The race to the bottom is huge here. But one team that is built around this conceit, the Dishonor for Connor. They were built to dishonor the sport of hockey. They are doing the opposite of that right now.
That's right.
They are actively sabotaging their future. The Arizona Coyotes, they've won 4 straight. They have points in 8 of 10. They have not lost a game in regulation, I believe, in their last 8 games. And this is also after they stripped almost everything bare from their roster at the trade deadline. Is this, first of all, what happened to tanking? And second of all, is this a team You know how they say, like, the most dangerous man is the one who has nothing to lose?
Right.
You know, is this like Rambo out in the out in the bush? He's got nothing left, and he's coming for you. Is this Arizona? Like, this is a you know, a feral man who's been left to the wilderness with nothing left to lose, so he's just, like, teams are going into Mullet Arena at their own peril at this point?
Right. Well, so here's the thing we always say is that players and coaches don't tank. Like, GMs can put their teams in a position to tank by making trades and things like that. But players are always going to try, and coaches are always going to try. Mm-hmm. And Arizona has a great coach in Andre Tourigny. And, you know, I look at what they've done lately, and, you know, I mean, you want this team to be good eventually. I mean, they're getting a lot of positive contributions. Like, Travis Boyd is red hot.
Oh, yeah.
Matias Michelli, who missed some time during injury, red hot. Yeah. You know, Clayton Keller's getting points. You know, Ivan Prosvetov has been awesome in net. Connor Ingram has been awesome in net. Like, they're still giving up a lot of shots, but their goalies are stopping
100%.
Almost all of them.
Yeah.
Yusuf Välimäki is hot lately. Mm-hmm. And this is a defenseman that, again, had some injuries
early
in development. Yeah, and, you
know,
didn't work out in Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like you're starting to see it where it's like, I mean, he always looked like he was going to be a great two-way defenseman as a prospect coming up, and it just it hadn't happened yet. But who's to say? Maybe it will happen now. You know, and you know, we kind of kid because if Arizona got Connor Bedard, then you would be looking at a future where their two number one their centers would be Connor Bedard and Logan Cooley
with Dylan Gunther on the wing.
Gunther on the wing and Clayton Keller. Mm-hmm. And you say to yourself, like, okay, well, that's something. That's
not bad.
That's the makings of a pretty sweet offense, because Logan Cooley has been one of the best college players in the nation this year.
One of the best players outside the NHL, just period.
Like, fair enough.
Incredible.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Future Watch on Stands Now. I know he's very high in that as well. So right now, I think Arizona would be drafting 7th if the lottery went chalk. They've passed a couple of teams recently, like Montreal and Philly.
Yeah.
In the East, they tank proper.
Yes.
And the Sharks as well have been brutalized. But they also have Ottawa's first rounder, as long as the Senators pick is not top 5.
Yep.
So they could win the lottery still and still get a very high second pick from the Senators, because I think the Senators are slated to pick probably somewhere between
like 11 or 13,
yeah, depending on the day. So the rebuild is still on track, but yeah, I mean, you want to put yourself in a better position, but I mean, to be honest, like, the worst teams, like Columbus and San Jose and Anaheim, I think, like, they've put themselves out of reach long ago in terms of actually being 32nd overall in the league. But what the Coyotes do have now is guys saying, like, yeah, I want to be around. I want to be a regular NHLer. I want to be around here long term. And this is the time they're proving it.
Look, this is maybe, like, in terms of the long term sort of outlook for the Arizona Coyotes, this is a nightmare. Like, I have to think that, even though, you know, like, every GM says, you know, like, we don't intend to tank, we want to win games, whatever.
Right.
Like, yeah, you know, they do. Like, we all know that. I got to think that Bill Armstrong is you know, like, is you know that gif of Jay-Z where he's, like, bopping, but he looks really worried? Like, I think that that's, I think that's got to be Bill Armstrong every time they score a goal.
Right.
Where it's like, oh, great. Like, you know. But at the same time, like you said, what they're showing is that, A, like, a lot, like, they're figuring out who to keep on this roster moving forward, because it's going to be decimated no matter. Everyone in Arizona is signed to one-year deals, other than, you know, like, Nick Schmaltz and Clayton Keller.
Yeah.
And on top of that, like, there are a lot of players who are getting opportunities on this team down the stretch run, where you would think that games don't really matter anymore, but at least in terms of, like, a pride thing and a development thing, they are, and they're showing that they belong. And I think that's a really, and they're showing that, on top of that, they're going, like, they're showing people that, hey, you might get an opportunity here. It's not a bad place to play, you know, like, and they have a great coach in Andre Tourigny, who I think is great. This is, as much as it really, really hurts, I'd say, like, their future projection, obviously, any team getting Connor Bedard would be great. Mm. I feel like in the summer, they assembled this roster in order to get Connor Bedard, and it just hasn't worked. But From the perspective of, you know, making this a viable place for NHL players to play, I think this is doing a great job.
Indeed.
And you always love to see these teams who everyone writes off and they come out and they flourish. That's great.
Exactly.
All right, moving on. A great story. It seems like we get one of these every couple of years.
Yeah.
For some reason, it is seems to always be with the Ottawa Senators.
It's true, yeah.
But Dylan Ferguson, Toronto Marlies legend, Toronto training camp legend. Here's his journey. The Leafs, they signed him to a PTO for training camp.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, this is Dylan Ferguson who... He was in the Vegas system for a bit. He actually...
He was drafted by Dallas.
He was in the Vegas system for a bit. He had to get called up and play a game in relief. So he didn't start, but he played a game in relief.
I think he was like 19 with that.
He went back to his junior team after that. Like, I believe
it was an emergency recall. He was with Kamloops.
Exactly. Yeah. He was in the WHL. And it was because that first year that Vegas was playing, like
all of their goalies
got hurt. And so they ended up having to rely on Maxim Lagacé and Dylan Ferguson for a little bit. Then he goes back to WHL, he rises up. So the Leafs this year signed to a PTO for training camp. Then they have a huge sort of like glut of goalies, but a lot of them are either suspended in Dryden McKay or injured in Joseph Woll. So he sticks around with the Marlies on an AHL PTO. And he sticks with the Marlies for 4 months on a PTO. He gets some starts there, and then Eric Schallgren goes back down, and then Keith Petruzzelli starts to play really well, and then Joseph Woll comes back from injury, and then the Marlies end up having this huge glut of goalies here, and so he's still on this PTO, but he's not really seen. And then in February, I believe it's February 22nd, they signed him to a one-year AHL deal. So everyone goes, okay, what's going on here? Like, the Leafs have three goalies in the AHL right now. And then they also have a bunch of guys in the ECHL who would likely, in any other circumstance, warrant a call-up. But yet they sign him. Then they loan him the next day to ECHL Wichita for summer, I guess just to get games. And then a bit later, they then trade him to the Belleville Senators, to which then the Belleville Senators, or the Ottawa Senators, sign him to a prorated one-year, two-way deal. And then last night, he makes his first NHL start, so technically debut, for the Ottawa Senators, and stops in a game that, look, although their season looks to be, like, they're still in it.
Right.
And they're playing a very good team, and he ends up, like, they're a very good team, a team that is also fighting for their lives, the Pittsburgh Penguins. And, you know, he's facing Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang in his first game. He stopped 47 shots to lead them to victory.
Yeah.
What a story.
Yes. And what I love is, you're right, like, we do get these stories.
Yeah.
And, Ottawa, you know, Andrew Hammond, that was a huge one a few years ago. I always like those goalie stories because, you know, netminders, they take longer to develop. And, you know, it's a position that gets a lot of attention. So I feel there's a lot of pressure on goalie prospects. And maybe not so much Dylan Ferguson per se, because, he wasn't like a first rounder or anything. And he did have that weird circuitous path. But, you know, it feels good. And the one that I always liked was Zach Fekale. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he did have a lot of eyes on him coming up in junior. One of my favorite stories is when he played for the Halifax Mooseheads, his carpool was him, Nathan MacKinnon, and Jonathan Drouin. Those three drove to the rink together every day, which I just think is, like, amazing and hilarious. And, you know, sort of getting to know all three of them over the years. They're all just, like, super nice guys. But, you know, Fekale, and again, not a big goaltender. I think he's maybe 6'1". He never really caught on. And then I think it was last season, the Washington Capitals would have been dead in the water if not for Zach Fekale coming up and
100%.
Giving them amazing goaltending. So it's like, you know, he finally sort of got his chance to shine. He was at the World Juniors. But at the NHL level...
Yeah.
He got his chance to shine, and he took advantage of it. It was just fun to see because it's a player that I had literally been watching since he was 16, 17 years old.
That's and Vukali, like, the way that he debuted so late, you know, like, and he like you said, he played meaningful games. That was really, really big. I have two that really stick out to me because, again, as well, I love these random, you know, like these random goalies who come out, they go on heaters at really important times. Andrew Hammond is the, like, he's the you look up in the dictionary, he's the photo right there.
Yeah.
That was a run for the ages.
Yes.
Like, that was, I don't think we'll ever see anything like that again.
Probably not.
He was like a 85 or whatever AHL goalie, last ditch, gets brought up and wins like 20 out of his 23 starts to will that team in the playoffs.
Just a buzzsaw.
Gets a free McDonald's for life card. He's eating he's getting meat thrown at him at games, which is the dream.
That's,
you know,
true.
It's remarkable. But there are two that I want to bring up, at least in my eyes, and one of them is more of the Fucali route. That it's not like he went on a crazy heat or anything, but it's the fact that he finally debuted and he showed his medal and everything. One's Jeff Glass.
Mm-hmm. So another World Junior goal.
Another high-level team. He was on that 2005 Team Canada team that was in the World Juniors that was, like, stacked. Like, everyone, you had, like, Getzlaff and Perry and you know, like, if you name a good player from that era, Jeff Carter, all the Mike Richards, all of those guys, they were all on that team. It's one of the most stacked just hockey teams ever. He was the goalie, and you know, like, and then he bounced around everywhere. You know, KHL, ECHL, AHL, and he finally got his debut with the Chicago Blackhawks in 2017-18. You know, he was like 31 or 32, or no, he's 37 now, so he was. Yeah, I believe he was 32 when that happened. And he got 15 starts, and he went 3-7-3, with an 898. But the fact that this guy finally made it, this guy went halfway across the world and back, made it as well. And another one, and this is going to stick with Leafs fans here, is this is right around the time when I was forming actual hockey memories, is the JSO Ben run. Do you remember him?
Not really.
You don't remember John Sebastian O'Ban?
I mean, I remember him, but I don't remember him having.
You don't remember the run?
Crazy run. That's
well, this is so he was a journeyman. Like, you know, he had gone from, well, he was with Pittsburgh, and he bounced around from the ECHL to the IHL to the AHL, and then he was with the Leafs. He plays for the Marlies. It's an 899 that season. It's 2005-2006. This is the first year after the lockout. So this is the year the Leafs missed the playoffs by 1 point, because the Devils rested Martin Brodeur in the final game of the regular season,
and they needed
the Devils to win. Right. They put Scott Clemenson in, and the Islanders won in a shootout. Wade Dublowitz, another one of these guys. Nice. But John Sebastian O'Ban, he gets called up final 11 games of the season. You know, there is, like, the Leafs are on their last hopes. It seems like there's nothing can go right. Keep in mind, 899 in 46 AHL games. He's like 27, 28 at the time. He goes on a 9-0-2 run with a 924 save percentage to get them to the brink of the playoffs. And then nothing good ever happened after that. He was their backup the next year. He put up an 876 and was never seen from again, at least in Toronto. Then he put up an 886 the next year in Los Angeles, one away. But for those 11 games, I remember the chokehold he had on that fan base. He was the only reason they were getting close to the playoffs. He took them from, it's like if Dylan Ferguson basically debuted with the Senators and led them to the playoffs.
Right.
Like, it's the same sort of sample size here. Same. It's like if he played every game for the rest of the season against really tough opponents and led them at least to the brink of the playoffs. Yeah. That was a great. So those are my two favorite random goalies.
Nice.
Here. And then finally, another goalie topic here.
It's a big goalie podcast.
Well, small goalie,
yes.
At least in this topic, is big Devin. Small. Devin Levi.
Yes.
So one of the best college goaltenders, I would say, ever. Like, he is having an incredible...
Well, he never won anything.
Okay, so he never won anything. But in terms
I
of
go that far.
Actual statistics...
Yeah, statistics are very good.
Yes, and you'll have to take that up with my American Pipeline co-host, Sidney Wolf, who lists him as one of the best college goalies of all time. Yeah. But Devin Levi, you know, incredible. The only thing against him, he's 6 feet.
Yes.
Which you hate.
Right.
And so he signs his 3-year entry-level contract with the Buffalo Sabres. There was some hesitancy about whether he would. Now he has, so he is in the NHL. He is ready. There is hype about another 7th-round pick, but he just became an absolute monster in college and was arguably the most hotly anticipated goalie prospect of the last 2 years. Now he's in the NHL. What should we expect, considering as well that Ryan doesn't like short goalies?
Yes. So I think this is going to be very similar to what our expectations should be for Dustin Wolf.
Okay.
Very similar goaltenders where, yeah, they don't have the size, but they've gotten results pretty much wherever they've gone. And again, you know, my theory goes more to playoffs. And again, you know, Northeastern never really did much damage at the national tournament when Devin Levi was there. But, I mean, he was an incredible goaltender for the Huskies. I would like to see the Sabres give him starts down the stretch, and I do see him as a goaltender that could really surprise in the short term. For me, Ukko-Pekka Luokkanen is the future starter in Buffalo, and I think he's already sort of shown it this year where it's like, okay.
In spurts, yeah.
In spurts, yeah. And Craig Anderson certainly has bailed him out on many occasions. But, you know, I'm more comfortable with UPL because of his size. Yeah. I think Devin Levi could either be that, like, the Soros backup to UPL's Pekka Rinne. Like, it's kind of funny how, like, they're, you know,
history repeats itself.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, you know, Luokkanen's Finnish and tall, and so is Rinne.
Yeah.
You know, Levi's the same size as Soros. Now, I mean, now Soros has become very much a sort of a mold-breaking starter, I would say, in the modern NHL. Like, you don't have many goalies like him. And, you know, talking to prospects, a lot of them look to Soros and say, like, yeah, like, we can relate to him. You know, like, we watch him, we model our game after him because, you know, we're not all 6'5". But he has shown that you can thrive in the NHL.
Well, it's like how guys saw Pete Davidson date every model in the planet and went, I have a shot.
There you go.
This is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except they didn't.
Exactly, yeah.
So, you know, long term, I'm very interested to see what Devin Levi can do. I would love to see him get some starts, especially because the Sabres at this point are out of it. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to get, and I'm sure Buffalo will give him some starts, because why else would you sign him to an NHL?
Why would you burn a year of his ELC?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, part of that is an enticement to sign the contract.
Yes, but bad asset management if you just...
Yeah, you got to give him some shot. And you know what? I mean, maybe he spends all next year in Rochester. That would be totally cool. I'm totally fine with that. Because that would be great for his development. You don't want to rush him in. But I do want to see him because he is certainly a very exciting goaltender to watch.
Absolutely. All right, well, Ryan, time for rapid fire.
Let's do it.
Now, I have three questions for you.
Okay.
They're somewhat, not really related, but they're just ones that as I was walking here, I went, what would I just genuinely like to know from Ryan's brain?
Okay.
So number one.
It's a dangerous.
I know.
Concept.
So number one is, it's movie related,
okay.
And I hope this translates to, I would say, the podcast that it, the same way it did in my brain. Who is your favorite character actor?
Oh, character actor.
So a character actor is basically...
Of that guy.
That guy. You look at you're watching a movie, a guy shows up, you go, oh, it's that guy.
It's that guy.
You cannot immediately get their name.
Right.
That guy or girl.
Yes.
Because it can be a character actor or actress.
That guy or girl, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? I'll give you one of each, because you opened it up like that. Mm-hmm. And they're both comedic actors.
Okay.
Gary Cole.
Yes.
For sure.
Ricky Bobby's dad.
Ricky Bobby's dad. Also Lumberg in The Office.
Yes.
Yeah, and
Office
many
Space.
Other things. Office Space.
He's and then, always good.
Yeah, and then I'll go Judy Greer on the other side.
Because, the queen.
Yeah, Judy Greer's fantastic, and I'm a huge Archer fan, and she voices Cheryl/Carol. So yeah, those are my two favorite that persons.
If you've ever seen a romantic comedy, ever in your life, Judy Greer is the lead's best friend.
I think she even made a movie making fun of that concept.
No, she wrote a book.
Oh, was it a
called,
book?
Like, okay. My Life is the Best Friend or something. Like, that's her, and she's good in everything. Like, she's awesome. I think she should get her leading, like, she should be the the person who gets her leading role now.
Yes.
I have a couple. One is Lisa Kukowski. She is the. Have you seen Neighbors, the movie, with Seth Rogen? Yeah, she's the real estate agent.
Oh, okay.
That sells their house. She's in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
She's always funny. June Diane Raphael. I'm not sure if you know her. She's you know Paul Scheer, another one. So she's his wife. And they also host a podcast called How Did This Get Made, where they look at terrible movies and they laugh about it. And it's great.
Nice.
But she's in like a bunch of, like, I couldn't even list all the things she's in.
Right.
But she's great. Jason Mantzoukas is my favorite.
Oh yeah, he's a good one too.
He is my favorite. Every single, like, it doesn't, whatever he's in, he will make you laugh.
His episodes when he guest judged on Nailed It are like two of the best episodes of Nailed It.
His character of Rafi in the league is like, I can't repeat anything he said on this podcast, but like if you want to look up unhinged in the dictionary, it's incredible. And then another one who I enjoy is Stephen Tobolowsky.
Oh, totally.
He is just, you put him in anything, and he brings this extra sort of, not gravitas, but just like energy to something. Yes. It's very quirky, like unhinged. He was really good in the first season of Glee.
He
played a drama teacher. Mm-hmm. If I want you to go look up Stephen Tobolowsky, Josh Groban, because it's a line I cannot say.
Yeah,
but it's just, his timing is great.
Also on Archer now.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, he does the voice on Archer. Everything. Also one of the best movie deaths ever in the movie Single White Female.
Well, how do you die?
High heel to the eye.
Oh, yeah. That's how you want to go. Yeah. Okay, another one here. Again, not really related, but Ryan, you know, before we started recording, we were talking about how Twitter is a cesspool, and I was thinking, what is your favorite take that you've ever seen on Twitter?
And this could be
favorite in an ironic sense, or this could be favorite in a you actually think this is a good idea.
Right. I avoid takes so much, but I guess the one that I'll say was my favorite because it led to my favorite joke was there was some right-wing guy who was saying, like, boys should be this. Mm-hmm. And the response from somebody else was, the only thing the boys need to do is be back in town.
Yeah.
And I thought that was the most amazing joke ever, so I'll say that one.
Yeah. Mine is, and I named my fantasy team after this, it's just one single tweet that got me chuckling. It was a guy, I'm not sure, some random account that just went, me and my friends would have killed E.T. with hammers, I can tell you that much.
Right, yeah.
And that is my favorite. I don't know why, but that makes me laugh. I have it screenshotted on my phone, and I look at it whenever I'm feeling down, and I named my fantasy team, I can tell you that much, after. Yeah. And it's that part that, like, it's like, we would have killed him with hammers, I can tell you that much. It got me chuckling. And then finally, and this is going back to the movie thing here, what is a type of movie that you wish they made more of today? Because it seems like now, you know, you either go huge or you go small, right?
Yeah.
You either have a Ant-Man Quantumania that is very mid, in my opinion, or you have like a tiny little independent movie that gets a ton of awards. You don't really have anything. What's a type of movie that you wish they made more of?
You know what? Like, I feel at this point, maybe it's like sort of old school, like, team-ups. Like, I never saw The Expendables because it just came out at a time that I didn't care about that stuff. But, like, I love, like, the old, like, The Dirty Dozen or The Magnificent Seven. Like, the originals where it was, like...
Or, like, the Italian
Job. James Coburn was always in those and, like, Charles Bronson. It's, like, I love movies where there's just, like, a bunch of people and they have a task.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. One for me is, and what's interesting is there's a reason why the trailer of this garnered so much attention is, I miss like the R-rated like 90 to 95 minute comedy with sort of like a big comedic actor and like a very straightforward premise like a Superbad, but also I mean like just sort of those like they're being made for like $20-30 million,
right.
Big name in it. There's a very sort of like, you know, this guy's gotta do this, but then this happened. You know, like, I love those. And there's one that came out, I can't remember what it's called, but Jennifer Lawrence is starring it. It's like a very straightforward, R-rated comedy. I think she has, like, she wants to, this loser kid's parents, like, pay her to basically, like, I guess sort of show him, like, what it's like to have friends and, like, have a girlfriend and stuff. And she's doing it for the money, and it looks very funny. I wish those movies were made more, because we don't see these big, not big budget, but like mid budget, marketable comedies like go into theaters anymore.
Yeah, and especially things that are 90 minutes.
Exactly, like a quick lean 90.
Yes,
you're in and you're out. You're laughing. Great, I love those. I wish we had more of those. And I wish we had more time, Ryan, but unfortunately... Hey,
there's always next week.
There's always next week. This was a great episode. If you want to look at this episode or any of the past episodes of any of the Hockey News podcast, you can go to hockeynews.com/podcast as well on any of your podcatchers. We have other independent streams now, so you can go and subscribe to whichever one you want. They're lovely. Ryan, I will see you next week. Take care.